if I interrogated them alone, rather than in a kitchen full of servants. As we all made our way out of the room, I stole a sticky bun from a nearby tray, calling out a thank you to the general hubbub, since the staff seemed to have taken my exit as a cue to resume their usual chaos. I munched as I walked along, following Tara and Lottie's voices as they debated which part of the castle to show me next. They eventually decided on the theatre, and we started off down one of the wings. I licked the last of the sweet icing off my fingers as I tried to come up with a strategy. No brilliant ideas presented themselves. "What did Connor mean about running out of time?" I asked eventually, hoping to surprise them into an answer. But from their silence, I guessed they had been expecting it. "What does Connor ever mean?" said Tara after a long pause. "He's always looking for a reason to be sour." Her attempt at prevarication was so blatant that I could see there was no point in pursuing the matter directly. "What were you both doing in the kitchens?" I asked instead. "I didn't know you spent much time there, Lottie." Tara giggled. "She didn't used to. But then I let her know that Samuel always spends his mornings there if he isn't on duty. I dragged her along with me because I have this brilliant plan to..."
"Embarrass me,"
Lottie sounded glum.
"You know that's all that's going to happen, right?"
"Don't be so pessimistic. You're nice, and you're pretty too. I'm sure Samuel would like you if you gave him the chance."
"And if he doesn't, he'll have to answer to me."
I peered around in confusion.
"Is this the right way?"
"Oh, no, sorry. We were supposed to take that corridor back there."
Tara's voice was moving away, so I followed it. "You know I should make you both carry a candle or something, so I know where I'm going," I said.
"That's a good idea," said Lottie.
Two candles detached themselves from the nearest sconce and floated to a spot just ahead of me. One of them dropped slightly and then moved away from the other. We started off again, and I watched the bobbing candles in fascination.
"This really is one of the strangest things I've ever done."
"Only one of?" Tara sounded amused. "If this castle isn't the strangest thing you've ever encountered, your Arcadia must be a very odd place indeed." "You're forgetting that competing in the Princess Tawny was what got me here in the first place. And I don't know if anything could top some of the things that happened there."
"What was it like?"
"It must have been terrifying," I shrugged. "I had my sister with me, which helped. As for what it was like," I looked down, "we're forbidden to talk about it."
"We know what that feels like."
Lottie's quiet words sounded sad. I bit my lip. It wasn't really fair of me to be trying to coax the servants into talking about something that might get them into trouble. But I was helpless, lost in the dark without information, and I didn't know how else to get it. I cast around for something I could say to brighten the mood.
"You know, something has just occurred to me. When you carry candles, or bowls or blankets, I can see them, floating through the air. Why can't I see your clothes?"
My eyes grew wide. "Please, please tell me you're not all naked in this other realm."
"What?"
"No." Tara dissolved into giggles.
"Oh, can you imagine?"
She drew a deep breath and then went off into another round of laughter.
"Definitely not," said Lottie in a more dignified tone. "Our personal possessions, like our animals, came with us. Only the communal items belonging to the castle remain with you, able to be touched by either of us."
"It was a rather ingenious solution," I murmured quietly to myself.
"Solution, Your Highness? Never mind. Are we nearly at the theatre?" "Yes, it's just here."
Both candles stopped outside a nearby door, and then the door itself swung open. Stepping inside, I saw a reasonably sized room with several rows of tiered seats. A small platform at the front of the room was framed by red velvet curtains, and gilt statues lined the edge of the room. "Goodness!" I blinked several times.
"It is a little gaudy, isn't it?" said Tara. "It's certainly not much fun to dust."
"What use is there for such a room in a castle that hosts so few guests?"
"Oh, that's just Prince Dominic. Apparently some crown princes in the past used to like to bring large groups of nobles down here with them. They would have readings and recitations, and even small plays on occasion.
I certainly could not imagine Dominic sitting in one of the spindly chairs. It would probably collapse beneath him.
I walked down the series of broad, shallow steps and stood on the platform facing the chairs. I tried to imagine them full of brightly dressed nobles, and had to blink again. If the room was overwhelming now... Still, it seems a pity for the room to sit unused.
"Oh, it isn't unused," said Lottie. "The servants use it all the time. Some of the maids can recite beautifully, and the pastry chef can sing the most incredible opera. Even the stable boys sometimes put together humorous routines."
I must have looked shocked because she hurried to reassure me.
"Only on our half days off, of course. Usually we all have different days off spread across the week. But once a month we have an extra half day altogether. The kitchen leaves out a cold meal for the prince and they clean up the scraps the next morning. I suppose you would have missed it since the last one happened while the prince was ill. Naturally, the medical staff would not have considered taking time off in such a situation."
"How considerate of Prince Dominic."
"Oh, yes," agreed Tara. "Several of the maids started out working in the capital, and they said they never got an extra day like that there. But it's been the way here for several years."
"But he always seems so, well, terrifying, you mean?"
asked Lottie. I nodded, but my mind flew back to the time when Dominic had been ill in bed. I had wondered then if, despite his brusque behaviour to them, the servants had a reason to be grateful to him. "His ill humour was bad enough before. Well, you know, before," said Tara. "I'm sure I couldn't speak to him without my knees knocking together. But he always makes a point to set up systems for his staff that are more than fair."
Lottie murmured her agreement. "As long as you stay out of notice, you don't get roared at. And then he's an excellent master."
"What was he like before?" I asked,
following Tara's lead and not mentioning the curse.
"I can't imagine it."
"Well..."
Usually Lottie was the cautious one, so Tara's hesitation made me dread what was coming next.
"He was a little less angry, I suppose."
I stared in their vague direction.
"That's it? A little less angry?
His parents die, his kingdom is cursed, and he's transformed into a beast, and he only becomes a little angrier. What in the kingdoms was he like before?" Tara giggled.
"When you put it like that..."
"It's true that he was angry and proud and rude before the curse," said Lottie,
surprising me with her honest speaking.
"But he wasn't nearly so bad. My family has worked at this castle for generations, and they told me about the good years here after King Nicholas was crowned. After he became king, Queen Ruby used to come down here alone, except for the children, for long visits to work on her rose garden. None of us servant children were allowed to play with them, but they used to have a merry enough time together, apparently. The prince never minded playing with his sister, even though she was 4 years younger. My older brother said he sometimes used to spy on them, and the prince always let his sister win when they played games together. Only they stopped coming after a few years. And then His Highness grew old enough to come alone. As the years passed, he came more and more frequently, and he seemed more and more ill-tempered."
She hesitated.
"I know it is none of my business, but I've always felt as if he came here to escape the capital. And whatever it was he wished to escape, it was having a bad influence on him. I'm glad I have never had to live in the capital."
The portrait of Dominic's father loomed in my mind. I would have attempted to escape such a man too. I only wished I knew what had happened to Princess Adelaide. I could no longer imagine Dominic would have done anything to harm her. I wandered over to one of the chairs and sat. The last time I had spoken to my sister, Lily had called Dominic a monster, and I had even agreed with her, mostly. In the weeks since then, I had started to question that assumption. But then something would happen to cause him to revert back to his beastly self,
like he had the night before. Each time it happened, I was forcefully reminded of the trials and terrors of a Princess Tawny, a competition shaped by his twisted nature, and of the way he had ordered me here alone, without the least consideration, and proceeded to treat me contemptuously. And yet then I heard stories like this from the servants, which confirmed the picture of him I had started to build in my mind, a picture of a man who was more prince than monster. But was I fooling myself? What was the truth? I wished desperately that I had some way to discern his true nature. I would have called my godmother and begged her to tell me, but she had yet to respond to either Lily or me in these lands. Apparently the brief but earth-shattering appearance of the godmothers in Palinar had not opened a door to their return. I had come to the conclusion that our godmother had already gifted us in preparation for these adventures, knowing she would not be able to reach us here. But then perhaps Lily had been more successful in Marin since I had left. After all, they had defeated the darkness there already, and done so with the assistance of a godmother. If I could only discover why Dominic had been made into a beast. What evil had he committed to deserve such a fate?
Would you like to continue the tour?
Tara's question interrupted my musings, and I agreed to move on, knowing the answers I needed didn't lie in my own head.
"What happens to you all when the prince travels to the capital?"
I asked them as we made our way through a series of unused guest chambers.
"Do most of you travel with him?"
"Back to the capital?"
Tara sounded confused.
"The prince never travels back to the capital."
"Surely he does not stay here all year round. He must make at least short trips back now that he is the only remaining royal."
"But he cannot."
"Tara!"
Lottie whispered, warningly. I stopped. "What do you mean he cannot?" Both girls remained silent.
"Tell me."
Lottie sighed.
"Prince Dominic cannot leave the castle grounds, or he will die. It is part of the enchantment, and why he nearly died after he went out after you."
I leaned against a nearby wall, my head spinning. So that was why his injuries had resulted in such a severe illness, and why it had progressed so strangely. He had not merely responded to the attacking wolves in the heat of the moment. He had left his sanctuary alone to come find me, knowing there was a good chance he would die.
Chapter 20. I returned to my chamber before the evening meal, wanting a bit of space to process my thoughts. I asked the girls to be back in time to help me dress, but when they returned, it was with a large tray. Steam drifted off the various plates of food, and my heart sank.
"Don't tell me I'm free to eat on my own this evening," I asked, pretending to them and myself that I was glad to eat alone.
"His Highness must have been exhausted by his ride," said Lottie.
But she sounded uncomfortable. Everyone knew the prince was back to full strength. I looked away, hiding a flush. It stung a little to have a whole castle full of people witness my rejection. When I had regained my composure, I turned back to them with a smile.
"I think I'll take the opportunity to have an early night. If one of you can unlace me now, you can both take the rest of the evening off."
But my early bedtime led to a disturbed night of fitful sleep. I kept dreaming I was back in the woods with the wolves and woke up countless times to the sound of howls. When I got up in the morning, I felt tired and out of sorts. I missed my sister and the rest of my family, and the various activities that had made my life productive at home. And I was sick of invisible people and strange magic, and a beastly man who did nothing but confuse my emotions. After being abandoned the day before, I had no intention of showing up for our usual garden stroll. But my decision to visit Chestnut led me through the entrance hall only 20 minutes later than our usual meeting time. To my surprise, the prince waited there, one foot propped up on the stones in front of the fireplace, as he stared blindly into the unlit cavity. At my entrance, he started and looked up.
"You came. I had almost concluded there was no point waiting any longer."
I bit my lip. I felt too tired for a fight. He cleared his throat, and I frowned at how uncomfortable he looked.
"I'm sorry for yesterday. I needed space and a chance to clear my head, but I should not have gone riding without first informing you of my change of plans."
I stared at him, temporarily robbed of words. Had the beast just apologized for something? He grimaced, as if embarrassed by the justice of my shock.
"I would like to make it up to you, with a surprise of sorts."
"A surprise?" He held out his arm.
"I promise it is a pleasant one, or at least I have tried to make it so."
I shook my head, still in shock, but placed my hand on his arm. Today had taken an unexpected turn, and my emotions were scrambling to catch up. As Dominic led us through the castle, he talked casually of his pleasure at riding again and of Spitfire's excellent condition. Every now and then he glanced at me, concern lurking in his eyes, as if he feared I might take offence at the topic. I responded as minimally as politeness would allow, trying to work out from our path where he might be taking me. But we seemed to be moving deeper into one of the few parts of the castle I had yet to explore. Finally, he pulled me to a stop in front of a double wooden door, arched and carved with flowers and woodland animals. I eyed it. What lay behind such a door?
"Will you close your eyes? I'll lead you in."
The anxious uncertainty in Dominic's eyes seemed out of proportion to the seriousness of the question. Looking up at him, I realized he was asking something deeper. He was asking me to trust him. My breathing hitched and then sped up as I considered the question. Could I trust someone with such wild swings of emotion and behavior? But his earlier apology still echoed in my mind. After the past month, I knew how big a step that had been for him, and somehow I couldn't bear to reject him immediately afterwards. "Of course." I closed my eyes, keeping them shut even when he moved away from me. I heard the doors creak open, and then he returned and took my hand. A small shiver shook me. It felt far more intimate than my hand in the crook of his arm. Or perhaps it was just because my eyes were closed. He pulled on my hand and I stepped tentatively forward, resisting the urge to stretch out my other hand to feel for obstacles. We walked forward several steps before he stopped and dropped my hand.
"You can open your eyes now."
I opened them and looked around. For several seconds I couldn't make sense of what I was seeing. I appeared to be looking down on a wonderland, an internal garden that mimicked the one outside. For a delirious moment, I couldn't determine if it grew flowers or books. Then I blinked, and the scene came into clarity. I stood inside the doorway, at the top of a small flight of stairs, looking down on the most unique library I had ever seen. Wooden bookshelves formed spiral passageways that wound around each other into a distant center, and every one was filled with books. Tall arched windows flooded the space with light, and chairs nestled within the curves carved in the same patterns as the door. It would have been a beautiful room just from its design and contents, but someone had transformed it into something magical by covering the entire room with roses. They wound around the chairs, covered the bookshelves, and had even been stuck between the books themselves. Without conscious thought, I stepped down the stairs and began to wind through the books, running my hands along the spines and breathing in the smell of them. As my eyes caught on titles, I saw books on mathematics, economics, history, politics. I walked past them, memories of home and my family overwhelming me. My sister-in-law, Alyssa, would love it here. But as I curved around, new memories came as well. Memories of reading aloud to Dominic as he recovered from his illness.
As the spiral tightened, I felt utterly enclosed by the safe and familiar. And yet, at the same time, the room was so unlike any library I had ever encountered. This mirror of the magical rose garden outside felt as much like my new home as my old one. I made a final turn and found myself in the center, where the spirals met. I could hear Dominic's soft footfalls behind me, and began to turn toward him, but gilded pages caught my eye. I stopped to examine the books more closely, before looking up at him in wonder.
"Fairy tales," I murmured. "The fairy tales are all in here."
"I made this for you, so what else would be at its center?"
The smile looked awkward on his face, his fangs getting in the way, but the light in his eyes more than made up for it.
"I know that you would have wanted to share your birthday with your sister, and..."
He paused, looking almost as awkward as he had done during his apology.
"And I know that it's my fault you cannot. So I wanted you to have something special for your birthday. In Palinar, a princess's 18th birthday is usually celebrated with a ball, but I hope that you will be able to enjoy this anyway."
He gazed into my eyes.
"Happy birthday, Sophie."
I drew in a sharp breath.
My birthday? Today was my 18th birthday.
And Lily's? I had completely lost track of the days in this strange life, so removed from my normal one. Flushing, I looked away. The center of the spiraled bookcases formed a round nook where two comfortable chairs flanked a small table. A vase of roses and a chocolate cake had been placed there. I walked over to it, slowly shaking my head, still in shock. But perhaps some part of my mind had remembered, and that was why I had woken dissatisfied and with my family on my mind. Two tears slipped down my cheeks. I had never imagined that I would spend this day apart from my twin. We had spent years dreaming up different plans for our 18th birthday, many far too outrageous to ever come to pass. I swallowed and wiped at my face. Somehow Dominic had known and had gone to all this effort for me. My grief didn't erase my gratitude to him for marking the day, and I didn't wish to show him a face full of tears. When I was sure I could smile, I turned around.
"I could not have imagined such a thing," I said. "Thank you."
He hadn't moved from where he stood, but at my words he strode over to join me.
"But how did you know? I didn't think I'd mentioned anything about it."
He glanced away, his face tightening, and my curiosity rose.
"Dominic?"
He looked back at me.
"I don't want to make you angry with me on today of all days."
"Angry with you?"
I put my hands on my hips. "Well, now I'm really curious. And it's my birthday, so you have to tell me anything I ask. And do whatever I say, too," I added for good measure. Dominic raised both eyebrows.
"Is that how birthdays work in Arcadia?"
"Oh, absolutely," I said. But I couldn't quite restrain my smile, and I could read in his eyes that he knew I was teasing.
"Well, in that case..."
But the amusement dropped from his eyes as he continued to speak.
"When I returned from my ride yesterday, I knew I had behaved badly. I returned to my chambers, but my thoughts of you had made me curious. I wanted to see your sister, this other Sophie who might have won the tourney and come in your place. So I asked the mirror to show her to me."
I gasped, but he didn't stop.
"Its logic sometimes works strangely, and I thought that, given our betrothal, it might see her as one of my family, despite her not being Palinaran. And it worked."
He paused.
"I didn't expect her to look so much like you. But at the same time, she seemed different, somehow. She was with Prince Jonathan of Marin, and another girl I didn't recognize. They were discussing how the other girl had decided to delay a visit to Princesses Emmeline and Giselle of Eldon.
Celine, so she's still with Lily? I'm so glad.
Dominic looked at me questioningly. Princess Celine of Llanover, I explained. One of our allies from the Four Kingdoms. She and the Llanoverian delegation came on the same ship we did. He looked at me curiously.
You're going to have to tell me more about your home and how you came to be a part of the tourney. It still seems like a great mystery to me.
I bit my lip. We had avoided talking about our families previously, keeping our conversation to less personal ground. Did his sudden interest mean he also intended to finally tell me what had happened with his family?
But how did you know about my birthday?
He shifted uncomfortably.
This Celine apparently doesn't want to leave while you're still in danger. Your sister was pleased that delaying the trip meant Celine would still be there for Lily's birthday ball the following night. Tonight. She was angry, he coughed, with me. That you couldn't be there.
My tears welled again at the thought of Lily and my shared grief. But I also felt a tiny pang as I thought about the sorts of things Lily had probably said about Dominic. Still, if he hadn't been spying on my sister, he wouldn't have heard horrible things about himself. How else would she be likely to feel?
I realized that it was your birthday today, and that you would be sad without your sister and your family. So I spent the night setting this up. I thought foregoing sleep was the least I could do after all the rest you lost for my sake during my illness.
He frowned.
There wasn't enough time to set up a ball, but I wanted to mark the day for you. And we can still have a belated birthday ball on another occasion.
I felt such a swirl of emotion that I didn't know what to say. Grief to be parted from Lily and denied the celebration I always expected to have. Pleasure at this beautiful room. Anger that Dominic had seen my sister only yesterday, while I was not permitted to see her myself. Embarrassment that I had been upset when he cancelled our meal the night before. Astonishment that he had gone to such lengths. I kept trying to remember when I had ever seen him show such understanding and consideration toward another's feelings. Weeks had passed now, and yet he kept surprising me. I swallowed and looked down at the table.
How about we have a slice of cake?
If it's anything like the pastry chef's other creations, I'm sure it will be more than delicious. Dominic looked almost as torn as me, and I suspected he felt relieved I wasn't angrier, but also disappointed I wasn't more wholeheartedly happy at his gesture. But he only nodded his agreement. So we sat down together, a beast and a foreign princess, in a flower-filled library, and discussed the smallest and most inconsequential of things while we ate the most incredible cake I had ever tasted. For all Lily and my wild ideas, I could never have imagined such a birthday. Chapter 21. I spent the rest of the day in the library, determined to enjoy it as much as possible before the roses wilted. Dominic kept me company, more accommodating than I had ever seen him before. He showed me a whole section of fairy tales and even, for the first time ever, read to me instead of the other way around. His deep, growly voice turned out to be surprisingly perfect for the task. After a delicious lunch which the servant set up on the table that had held the cake, I even dozed off in a large padded armchair. I woke disoriented and experienced the wonder of the room all over again. I had intended to ask Dominic if I might see Lily in the mirror as a birthday present. I desperately wanted at least a glimpse of her birthday ball, but he was gone when I awoke. Tara waited for me instead.
"What do you think, Princess Sophie?"
She sounded as if she were bursting with excitement.
"Is it not the most beautiful thing you've ever seen? And the most romantic?"
She giggled. I smiled uncomfortably. There was no question of romance between Dominic and me, despite our betrothal. The prince was hardly the thoughtful romantic type. Or, at least, he had never been before. And surely everyone knew I wasn't here by choice or with any dreams of love. I was still determined to break the engagement and return to Lily. The only change was that now I knew Dominic needed rescuing along with his kingdom. Tara didn't seem to notice my discomfort, continuing to chatter away. I was so worried that Lottie would give it all away last night. She's terrible at keeping secrets. Did you notice how awkward she seemed? Oh, I didn't want to tell Tara that I had noticed, but attributed it to a different cause. Where is Dominic now?
He's down at the stables. He left me here to ask if you would join him. He wants to take you on a sunset ride.
I could tell from the way she said the final two words that she considered this more evidence of romance. I grimaced slightly, but I had to admit it was another unexpectedly thoughtful gesture. Some fresh air and time with Chestnut would be an ideal accompaniment to my day spent indoors. Dominic already awaited me in front of the castle, walking Spitfire and Chestnut up and down. The ride was beautiful, the oranges, reds and purples reflecting off the clouds to colour the snow beneath. By the time we returned to the castle, the evening meal had been laid out in the dining hall. It was the most magnificent meal we had yet eaten, with a full 10 courses followed by an even more extravagant cake than the one we had eaten in the library. I insisted that all the servants I knew join us for the cake, including Tara, Lottie and Gordon, and they all sang for me so enthusiastically I blushed. Dominic didn't seem comfortable with their presence or the casual way I made them share the cake, but he restrained himself admirably. When they all finally left, he walked me to the door of the dining hall, and my heart sank as I anticipated the inevitable question. But when he stopped in the doorway and looked down into my eyes, he merely whispered,
"Happy birthday, Sophie."
I had meant to take the opportunity to ask to see Lily as a birthday gift, but Tara's earlier comment about romance flashed through my mind. I couldn't ask to visit Dominic's bedchamber after dark. I just couldn't. That night, I lay awake for a long time, reflecting on a great many things. I had already had more adventures in my 18 years than many people had in a lifetime, and I wished, as I had many times, that Lily and I had never left Arcadia. Only this time, when the thought ran through my mind, I couldn't quite decide if I meant it. I could no longer imagine a life where I had never left home. Who would I be? Who would Lily be? Mornings walking in the rose gardens, afternoons reading in the library, and sunset rides became part of our daily life. Dominic still ordered me around thoughtlessly at times, and occasionally growled or roared at someone who attempted to cross him, but I could see he was making an effort. And a month after my birthday, he even laughed when Matthew remonstrated with him, which I took as a sign of progress. It wasn't only toward me that he had softened. Every now and then I would ask him about my ball, but I mostly did it to tease him. I suspected he kept putting off setting a day for it because he didn't like dancing and knew I would have no one else to dance with. When Dominic had business to attend to, I spent time in the kitchens, just listening to the servants going about their day, or I continued my tour of the castle with Gordon. Despite my explorations, I could find no further information on the curse, and incredibly, unbelievably, I might have begun to feel complacent about my life here if it were not for two things. The first was the niggling emptiness always present in the back of my mind, the place usually occupied by my awareness of my sister. Somehow, as the days progressed, it never seemed the right moment to ask to visit Dominic's bedchamber, and so I had not even seen her for many weeks. I knew that no matter how comfortable I became, I would never fully adjust to a life without my sister. The second was a change I began to observe in the servants. An underlying tension started to permeate the castle, and I often heard snippets of cut-off conversations that reminded me of Connor's comments from before my birthday. Time was running out. Every question about their meaning, however, no matter how direct, was deflected. Even Gordon remained quiet on the subject. After overhearing several comments, I tried asking Dominic, but he shrugged it off as some nonsense of the servants. I couldn't help questioning his disinterest and dismissal, but I didn't want to break the trust we were building by calling him a liar. He had returned to asking me every night if I would marry him in the morning, and I still said no. But he had started bringing me a rose from the garden each evening and presenting it with his question. And despite my refusal, I accepted the flower. It sat in a thin vase beside my bed, and every night I saw it as I drifted off to sleep and as I awoke, its perfume flavoring my dreams. I told myself I accepted it because I did not wish to see such beautiful blooms go to waste. But gradually this predictable life began to change. Looking back, I realized that it was a month after my birthday when Dominic and I first began to notice a change in the weather. At first, we merely commented to each other on the pleasantness of the conditions as we walked and rode. The balmy days seemed almost idyllic among the wintry landscape, and we noted it only as an enjoyable variation. It wasn't until a week later that I noticed, with a shock, a wilted flower. It was the first blemish I had seen in this magical garden. 2 days later, I rode along the orange grove and saw that all of the fruit and many of the blossoms had fallen to the ground. Several days after that, we were riding through mud, the melting snow turning the ground into a churning brown pit that splattered across the stomachs and flanks of the horses. One of the stable boys groaned when we returned them, and I could sympathize with his sentiment. Soon most of the plants in the garden had wilted and withered, and yet even now they didn't look natural. Impossibly they had taken on a bleached look as if wilted by the summer heat rather than killed off by frost. Each day the weather grew warmer too, as if the castle and grounds were returning to the proper late summer season. Only the rose garden seemed untouched, the melting snow doing nothing but making the ground there damp and springy. Dominic and the servants all professed astonishment at the change, but I still couldn't shake the feeling that everyone knew something they were carefully avoiding telling me. Was this what the servants were referring to when they talked about time running out? Did this signify the enchantment around the castle was breaking down? And if so, what did it mean for us all? I only hoped we weren't going to be left unprotected against the wolves. Dominic told me repeatedly that I had nothing to fear, but considering he also claimed not to understand the change in the state of the grounds, it was hard to take his assurances seriously. And yet, when I was actually in his presence, I found it almost impossible to be afraid. Although the mud soon dried, we began to limit ourselves to the rose garden, the only part of the garden that still retained its old vibrancy. As I walked there one morning, the wolves once again crept through my mind, and I looked up, almost reflexively, to be calmed by the sight of Dominic beside me. But I could see only the top of his head, several rows of bushes away. He must have wandered off to look at something while I was distracted. I took a single step toward him when a strong arm encircled my waist, jerking me backwards. A hand clamped down over my mouth. I struggled wildly against the unexpected restraint, my mind racing. None of the servants were capable of grabbing me in such a manner. As my unknown assailant dragged me backwards, I kicked at his legs and tried to wrench my arms free. Nothing I did broke the iron hold around me. I tried to bite at his hand, but couldn't get a good grip. My attempts to scream for help came out so muffled as to be almost inaudible. Terror coursed through me at the unexpected attack, all sorts of horrible scenarios running through my mind. I tried to think of anything I had ever been told about escaping such a hold, but nothing I tried worked. A sudden roar broke through the air. I went limp with relief, and a moment later was pulled from my captor's hands and shoved into the safety of a bush. For a moment, all I could see was green foliage as my ears filled with the sounds of a scuffle. The arms of the shrub proved less challenging than the arms of my assailant, and I managed to fight my way free to face the source of the chaos. The sounds of struggle had died away, and only the low rumble of Dominic's growl remained. The man he gripped looked small in comparison to the hulking prince, so it took me a moment to recognize him. When I finally did, I gasped. Dominic's hands tightened at the sound, his prisoner wincing.
"You recognize him?"
I nodded. "It's Cole." I had long ago confided my fears about the escaped nobleman's son to Dominic and told him what I had seen in the mirror. It had just never occurred to me to fear for myself.
"I don't understand. How did he get here?"
"And more importantly, what was he trying to do to you?"
I had never seen such a deadly expression on Dominic's face, and I shivered.
"Princess Sophie, please!"
Cole's face looked confused and a little desperate, but less calculating than I had remembered.
"I meant you no harm. I came here to rescue you." "By abducting you?"
Dominic's low background growl rose in intensity as he shook the other man, who seemed powerless to resist the prince's strength.
"Stop!"
I held up my hand, glaring at Dominic until he stilled.
"I won't have you shaking him senseless or losing your temper and killing him or something."
Cole paled at my words. "You have him in custody, and now he must be secured somewhere. Do you have a prison cell of some sort here at the castle?"
"He snuck in here and attempted to snatch you from the garden. He does not deserve your consideration."
I put my hands on my hips.
"Perhaps not, but we need to know how he got here. Or have you forgotten that last time we checked we were surrounded by an impenetrable wilderness full of vicious animals?"
Dominic's expression changed, and I could read the reluctant concession in his eyes. I looked around, wishing yet again that I could see the servants. Surely Dominic's roar had brought at least a few running to our location.
"Let the servants know where you intend to put him. I will go to the kitchens and have them prepare some food for him. I'm sure news of his location will have made it there by the time they have a tray ready."
"Food?"
Dominic sounded outraged, but I shook my head.
"He must be fed. I shall tell them to keep it to bread and water, if you prefer."
"I prefer to throw him out and let the wolves find him."
Dominic's words were punctuated by another, deeper growl.
"He made it here, didn't he? For all we know, such a course of action might allow him to go free, or return to attack us again."
Dominic's eyes widened at the suggestion, and for a moment I feared he meant to dispatch Cole on the spot. I held his gaze, however, and his grip slowly loosened again.
"Matthew,"
I called, without taking my eyes from the prince.
"Aye, my lady."
So someone had fetched the stable master, just as I hoped.
"Could you please assist Dominic in getting this man to a suitable location?"
"I don't need assistance from Matthew or anyone."
Dominic almost spat the words.
"You need assistance in keeping your temper."
I knew I should probably stay with them myself, but I needed a moment to myself to think through this astonishing development.
"You can rely on me, Princess Sophie," said Matthew,
and I smiled gratefully in his direction.
"I'll see you soon."
I turned to leave but stopped short when Cole called my name.
"Princess Sophie!"
When I wheeled back around to face him, he met my eyes, his own warm.
"Thank you."
I stared at him. "Don't mistake good sense and common compassion for a short memory," I snapped. "I haven't forgotten what you attempted to do a moment ago, or what you did in Marin either. I will bring you some food, but I will expect some answers in return." His face fell, and he said nothing. After eyeing him warily for another moment, I hurried toward the kitchens. As I strode into the castle, my mind raced. What did Cole mean by coming here? And how had he managed it? Surely this must be evidence that the changes we had observed in the ground stretched further into the kingdom. When I arrived, I found the kitchen abuzz. Clearly someone had beaten me here with the news. Questions bombarded me from every direction, but I shook my head until silence fell. I need bread and water for the prisoner. I won't know the answers to your questions until I have a chance to interrogate him.
Interrogate? Are you going to beat him?
I frowned, unsure from Gordon's voice if the prospect excited or repelled him.
Of course I'm not going to beat him. It's a cruel and ineffective means of obtaining information.
I will merely speak to him. If he ever wishes to be let out of whatever cell Dominic has found for him, he'll answer me.
I hope you're right, Your Highness, said Gilda. I don't like this situation. Not one little bit.
I forced myself to smile, attempting to lift the mood of the room. There is no need for so much pessimism. This may be a chance to gain valuable information, and at the very least we have evidence that it is now possible to cross the wilderness unharmed. Such a thing should be a cause of rejoicing.
For you, maybe, muttered a voice I recognized. I rounded on Connor.
Do you never work, Connor? You seem to always be here in the kitchen. Perhaps I should speak to the steward about increasing your duties, since they are clearly so light. He didn't respond, and I rolled my eyes. No? Well, see if you cannot work on a change of attitude. I have done nothing to deserve your constant snide remarks. If I wouldn't let a cursed prince speak to me in such a way, it was high time I stopped allowing a footman to do so.
Yes, indeed. Begone with you, Connor, said Gilda.
She said nothing else, so I assumed he must have complied. A tray floated toward me with a rather stale-looking hunk of bread and a small wooden cup of water. I eyed it skeptically, but sighed and accepted it. Apparently the servants shared Dominic's perspective.
"They've got him down in the dungeon!"
burst out a puffed voice moments later. It sounded young, one of Gordon's sometime friends among the stable boys, perhaps.
"I can show you the way down there, Your Highness!"
"Don't be ridiculous, Michael," said Gordon, confirming my guess. "I'm the princess's page boy, so I'll show her the way."
I hid a grin at the proud note in his voice. "Thank you, Gordon, and thank you for bringing the message, Michael. Perhaps the chef might have a sticky bun to give you by way of thanks."
"Thank you, Your Highness!"
I hoped the treat might go some way towards soothing his disappointment as I followed a bobbing, unlit candlestick out of the room. Gordon and I had long since adopted the use of a candle to make our trips through the castle easier. Gordon seemed bursting with excitement as we hurried down toward the dungeon, and my remonstrances only served to calm him for short bursts. Given his long-standing fascination with the place, I could hardly be surprised at his current excitement at finding it occupied. My fears, which had revolved around rats, darkness, and terrible smells, turned out to be unfounded. The dungeons were lit by a plethora of brightly burning torches, and the worst smell was that of stale air. Neither the corridor nor the couple of cells that I peeked into even appeared particularly dirty. The cold stone was certainly not appealing, but it was a great deal more pleasant than I had pictured. Gordon's excitement seemed to dim somewhat, and I wondered if he felt the same. Perhaps Gilda should have allowed him down here long ago. She might have found the location soon lost its appeal. Several guards called out their presence as we walked past, and we found Cole in the furthest cell. Dominic stood outside, his body tense, shooting frequent glances toward the closed door. When we approached, he frowned, first at the tray I carried and then at me. He held out his hands as if to take it from me, but I shook my head and tightened my grip. "I'm taking it in there myself."
"I don't want you anywhere near him."
"We need information. Do you really think he's likely to say anything to you?" I raised my eyebrows, and Dominic looked away, the frustration clear on his face.
"Well, I'm coming with you."
I shook my head again. "No, I need to speak to him alone if I'm to have any hope of getting the answers we both want. But by all means stay right out here, ready to rescue me if need be." I smiled as winningly as I could, and he seemed to soften a little.
Fine, but the door remains open.
I nodded, turning to face the cell door and ordering the invisible guards to open it for me. When I stepped inside, I was pleased to see that Cole had been left untied, and that someone had even managed to strew fresh straw across the ground. He looked up warily at my entrance, but his face relaxed at the sight of me standing there alone, and I knew I had made the right decision. He glanced past me to the open door and Dominic standing out in the corridor, but I didn't even attempt to close it behind me. I had no desire to be shut in a small cell with Cole. I placed the tray down on the ground and retreated several steps away from both it and him. He looked as if he meant to approach me, but stopped at the expression on my face.
"I'm sorry, Princess Sophie." He kept his voice low. "I didn't intend to harm you. I came to rescue you, and merely wished to get you away from that monster as quickly and silently as possible."
I frowned at his reference to Dominic, and had to remind myself that I had once thought of him the same way. It seemed an increasingly distant memory. "Why should I believe a word you say after what you did in Marin?"
"You mean what my father did?"
He ran a hand through his hair and sighed.
"No, you're right. I bear some responsibility, too. I didn't know the full extent of his plans, but I knew enough, and I shouldn't have gone along with them."
He shook his head.
"At the time, I thought it was the best hope of saving Marin."
He paused uncomfortably.
"And I'll admit, I didn't mind the idea of seeing my family elevated in such a way."
He met my eyes, his look open and honest.
"But I've had plenty of time for reflection since then, both on my conduct and on my heart. I've racked my brains for a way to atone for my behaviour. I knew no one else had dared to come after you due to the dangers, but I had no right to value my life so highly. If I died in the attempt, then perhaps it was only what I deserved."
I regarded him with furrowed brow, trying to read the truth in his eyes. "Why should I believe anything you say?" He shrugged, holding his arms out wide.
"I would understand if you did not. But please consider. I made no attempt to free my father or sister when I made my escape, and then I risked my life by coming here, which I did not have to do once I was free."
I stared at him, my mind troubled. Could he be speaking the truth? Chapter 22. I was almost silent during the evening meal, turning Cole's words over and over in my head and trying to glean his true purpose from them. He had answered all of my questions openly, but somehow had provided no real answers. He didn't know how he had made it through the wilderness. He had heard wolves in the distance, but he had carried firewood with him and lit a fire each night, which he believed had kept them away. His horse had managed to escape its ties on his final night, however, and had fled. He had expressed remorse and sorrow that looked genuine, fearing that the animal must have since fallen afoul of one of the wolf packs or of a bear.
"You cannot believe such a ludicrous tale."
Dominic, at least, seemed to share none of my feelings of confusion. I shrugged. "We can no more prove it to be false than he can prove it to be true. It is not entirely implausible, and he seems genuinely repentant, as much as such a thing can be judged from protestations alone."
"I don't trust him."
I sighed. "No, neither do I. I wish I could talk to Lily."
"It isn't safe."
Dominic was quick to squash the suggestion I hadn't made.
"Whatever he has claimed, you cannot risk leaving the castle grounds."
I chewed on a ringlet, afraid he was right. After what had happened last time, it was too risky, especially when Lily was unlikely to have any more insight than we did. I glanced up at Dominic. "He claims to regret allowing himself to be carried along by his father's evil schemes." My voice dropped to a whisper, amazed at my own boldness.
Do you have no sympathy for such a situation?
Dominic froze. Such a stricken look on his face that I instantly regretted my words. Memories of his father could cause him nothing but pain, and he had shown he didn't deserve to be compared to Cole. I held my breath, hoping he might finally tell me something of his curse, but he remained silent. In fact, neither of us spoke for the rest of the meal. When he asked me at the door if I would marry him in the morning, his voice seemed to hold a greater urgency than ever before. I refused him with a heavy heart. Cole might well be hiding the truth from me, but if he was, he wasn't the only one in the castle doing so. I spoke to Cole again the next day and the next, always with Dominic lurking just outside in the corridor. His story did not change, and he remained surprisingly accepting of his imprisonment in the dungeon cell, his manner humble and open. On the third night after his arrival, I tossed and turned in my bed, too perturbed by the unanswerable dilemma to sleep. Finally, I threw off the covers and got up, wrapping my thickest robe around me. I couldn't shake the feeling that Cole was hiding something from me. But each time I had visited, his uncomfortable glances in Dominic's direction had increased. I would never convince Dominic to let me see Cole alone. But I might never get the truth from him with the prince looming nearby, glaring murder. I crept from my chambers, listening intently for any sound of voices. Hopefully it was late enough that all the servants were in bed. As I passed by the entryway, a small sound caught my ears, and I stopped to peer carefully inside. Dominic paced back and forth in the large space, a fire burning low in the fireplace despite the warmer turn in the weather. So, I wasn't the only one unable to sleep then. I watched him for a minute, captured by the strength in his long stride and the concern etched across his face. I knew he was motivated only by consideration for my safety, and I hated going behind his back in such a way. But our situation could not continue as it had. When I arrived in the dungeon, a confused-sounding guard hailed me, but I put on my most royal face and ordered him to take me to the prisoner. When he hesitated, I raised a single eyebrow, and he stammered an apology and bid me continue on. Calling after me, he ordered one of the other men to open the cell door for me. When I stepped inside, Cole climbed slowly to his feet from a small nest of straw. I flushed at the poor conditions, although he had never complained. If he had come to rescue me, this was a sorry way to treat him. He had clearly just awoken and looked confused, glancing behind me.
"Princess Sophie, this is unexpected. You are alone?"
I ignored him, ordering the guard to close the door. I didn't think Cole would tell me the truth if he thought a guard might overhear us. When the man hesitated, I snapped, "Now!" He complied. The door swinging slowly closed, a mute protest against my order. I knew there was some risk, but I didn't think Cole was likely to harm me, even if he was lying. Not locked in a cell with guards outside.
"I wanted to speak with you alone. I think there's something you're not telling me."
Cole shook his head.
"You're very perceptive, Princess." "You're right. I didn't tell you the truth before."
I stepped back hurriedly and he amended his words.
"I didn't tell you the whole truth, that is. I couldn't with the prince standing there."
He had noticed my reaction to his previous references to Dominic as the beast then. "Well, he is not here now. I will have the truth, if you please." He sighed and rubbed his face.
"It's hard to know where to begin. I escaped the prison in Marin with the help of some true friends who did not wish to see me imprisoned. But I knew that I couldn't simply walk free. As I told you, I needed to atone for my past conduct."
He paused and glanced at me ruefully.
I will admit that rescuing you did not immediately occur to me. However, a party of guards sent from Marin caught up with me, somewhere inside.